Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
John O'Hurley. and I got into acting, I would say, at the age of 3 years old. I had people constantly standing around me as a three-year-old, and every one of them would always ask me the same question. What do you want to do when you grow up? What do you want to be when you grow up? And with a sense of disgust that only a three-year-old can muster, I would put my hand on my hips and I would say, I would point to the black and white TV in the corner of the living room and I would say, well, I am an actor, so that's what I'm going to be. And so for me, my entire life was always about realizing that every time I watched television, anytime I saw anything on stage or on film, I knew I was supposed to be there. So for me, it was just about connecting all the dots. I knew where I wanted to go. I just didn't know how to get there.
Well, you certainly have had such an amazing career over the decades, obviously. We all remember you from various things. We were talking about Family Feud, SpongeBob. My personal favorite is Seinfeld, so I would be remiss had I not asked about that. Can you share any memorable moments or challenges you faced while playing Jay Peterman on Seinfeld?
Well, you know, the character of Jay Peterman on the show is particularly unusual because it's a real person and it's a real company. And they never asked for permission to actually replicate the company on television. Seinfeld always held the position that it was easier to apologize afterwards than it was to try and get permission up front. And so they brought the character Peterman on. As it turned out, I had a show on ABC, a sitcom, that was canceled the day before. And so they called me when I was out to dinner that night with my manager, trying to take the cancellation as personally as I possibly could, crying in my beer. And Larry David's office called and said, we have this role on Seinfeld. Does John want to come over tomorrow? Now, originally, I said no, because my ego was so damaged from the cancellation that I said, well, I don't really want to go guest star on someone else's show. Well, turns out he never called. And the following morning, he called me at 10:30 and said, they're over at the set of Seinfeld waiting for you for the table read. So get over there. So I did. And the rest is history.
It certainly is. Do you have a favorite quote or a favorite line from your experiences playing Jay Peterman?
I have a million. I remember all of them, the monologues, but there was always one. The wedding cake episode, when she stole my priceless piece of wedding cake and replaced it with a $2 slice of Entenmann's. And I remember confronting her in my office after having discovered that she was the culprit. And I sat her down and I said to her, Elaine, do you have any idea what happens to a butter base frosting after 6 decades in a poorly ventilated British basement? I have a feeling what you are about to go through will be punishment enough. Good day.
Classic. We have a question from Spain. This is Carla. Carla, you had an awesome question. Go ahead and ask John.
Hello, Carla.
Hi. What was your favorite theater play or movie to play or just watch?
Thank you for asking. It's a very good question. Broadway is an enormous part of my career. And it is, if you were to ask me what is the favorite thing I have that I do, I would probably say Broadway. I have two shows that I have done on Broadway for extended periods of time. The Chicago, the musical, I played the lead, Billy Flynn, the silver-tongued lawyer. The other one is Spamalot, the Monty Python musical, which is on Broadway and a revival right now that'll be there for, actually, I think they're closing soon, but they've been on Broadway for the better part of the year. But I was there, I've done 2,000 performances as Billy Flynn there in Chicago, and probably 1,000 as King Arthur and Spamalot. So I would say those are my two favorites.
And we had a few questions because there's a lot of students on here who want to pursue acting and they want to know, how did you get prepared for a role like Billy Flynn in Chicago?
Well, the character comes very easily to me. He's very urbane, well-spoken. So, I mean, you can, you know, go down the list of boxes to check on how you would describe this character and how you would want to play him. All of them came fairly easy to me because of, you know, I was lucky enough to grow up around great parents and elegant people. And so the role came rather easily to me. Other roles, I just did a play called Every Brilliant Thing. It is the most difficult thing I've ever done in my entire career. It is a 90-minute one-man play. The subject is suicide, about a young man who has lived through the stages of having a suicidal mother. It was easily the most difficult thing that I've ever done in my life. It was essentially a 90-minute monologue that once it starts, it doesn't stop. And you're out there all by yourself. And it was probably the biggest challenge that I've had in my career, not only for the volume of what I had to do, but also for the subject matter that that I was dealing with, because I had to make it somewhat palatable, somewhat humorous, but yet it was a very serious a serious topic.
And it certainly is. And guys, we have plenty of edutainments coming up that have to do with supporting mental health. We have a question for John. This is from France. Chloe, you should be able to unmute and ask our guest.
Hello, yes. Chloe.
Hi. So my question was, when you began, did you have family or friends in the cinema industry?
No, I was all alone. And I was probably farther back than most people. I had to start way, way back because I didn't know anybody in the business of theater, or acting at all. I went to college, and the college that I went to really only had a very, very basic theater program. I always say that my senior year, I was the only theater graduate. So consequently, I won the theater award, but I was, I learned everything that I needed to about acting, and because it was so, there was so small that we did everything. We built the sets. We, you know, we painted the sets. We printed the tickets. We, you know, we obviously were in rehearsals as well. So I was so totally immersed in the theater that I had an opportunity to have every aspect of it presented to me. But my love was being an actor, and I knew that's what I was supposed to be doing. So I followed it through.
This is
but no, I didn't know anybody. I there wasn't another door I could knock on. There was nobody. When I went to New York, I went by myself with two suitcases and $800.
It's truly like the classic actor back in the day, just collar actor. And it's absolutely an amazing story. Lucille is in Europe. Lucille, you can unmute. You have a question that's right on par with where we're going with this edutainment.
I would like to ask, do you have any piece of advice for students who aspire to work in this industry?
Yes, I do. And that's a very, very good question. Most people think of show business as you're either an actor, a director, or a producer. Well, that's not true. There are so, I mean, the business of entertainment has grown and multiplied. The crossovers now between digital entertainment and stage entertainment are all, I mean, everything is so, everything is still looking for a definition for itself. And so I would say that the world is there for you to define for yourself. You define the way you want to do it. There's never been a time for better opportunities for young people who are interested in the entertainment world to create their own avenues. You know, I'm talking on a smartphone right now to all over the world globally. That opportunity didn't exist for me when I started out in the 1980s, when I went to New York was auditioning on Broadway for the first time. None of that happened. It wasn't available to me. Now the world is open to you because of the technology that we have available. So I would say there are so many other opportunities within entertainment now. Go find them. The digital entertainment and that entire world is growing exponentially right now. But I would say you have the opportunity to create your own material now. Whereas when I was starting out, I had to wait for somebody to create something to then hire me for. That I the opportunity to create something myself wasn't really there. There wasn't really an established medium for it. Even if I wanted to do my own film, I would have nowhere to put it. But now you have, you can create your own YouTube channel, and you can create all the content for that YouTube channel, and all of a sudden you are a network. You have global distribution. This never happened before. So I would say to anybody entering the business right now, there's a multiplicity of things that you can do. Look for them, find something that feels right for you, and then go create it, and don't let anybody stop you.
And side question, do you find that that is redefining what entertainment is nowadays with that medium of user-created content? Like, what's your take on that?
It truly is. I'll give you an example, and a rather current example. I have a 17-year-old son who has a project due next year for his senior year, and he's decided that he wants to go to the northernmost city in Alaska, the northernmost city in North America, and he wants to do a short documentary on what it's like for young people to live in an area of the world where it's dark half the year, completely dark, pitch black, and when it's also light the other half of the year, and all of the social issues that go along with that. Well, I mean, this is a wonderful opportunity for him to explore his curiosity with the use of film. So I would say, the world is your oyster. Go crack it open.
That is wonderful, wonderful, great advice. And if your son needs any contacts, we have middle schools in a place called Iqaluit, Canada, which is the northernmost middle school in all of North America. So, yeah.
We're going to Barrow. It's renamed by its Indian history. I cannot pronounce it, so I'm calling it Barrow, Alaska, which will be the northernmost town in America.
We'll be looking forward to that, and congratulate your son. That's a really cool endeavor.
It really is. I admire him for his curiosity. And that's another thing I want to bring up to you all, is that if I've ever been a success in any aspect of entertainment, it's because of this. I listen to my imagination. Now, your imagination is a very, very important tool. And your imagination is different than your rational mind. Your rational mind will lie to you all the time. It'll try to keep you safe and protected. It will try to keep you upright and balanced, but it will never allow you to challenge yourself, because that's scary. Your imagination will make you challenge yourself. Your imagination has the pictures inside of your brain of who you are and what you are supposed to be and what you're supposed to be doing. I want you to promise yourself that as an artist, you will listen to your imagination more than anything, because it cannot lie to you. It doesn't know how. All it knows is how to lead you in the direction. It is a 24/7 self-assessment of who you are and what you should be. Everything I've done in my career, and I've done more things than most actors. I've written books. I've composed music. I've hosted game shows. I have emceed. I have done Broadway. I have done film and television. I've done it all. But it's because I listen to my imagination. When my imagination told me finally to do Seinfeld, I went, even though I tried to push it off the night before. But always, always, your imagination is the tool to where you are supposed to be. And it's not just in entertainment. It's in all aspects of life. So please keep that in mind.
Well, one of my favorite lines that you ever had was Bosco, just Bosco. So my Seinfeld fanatics out there would know what that is. We have a question from Victor. We'll go with a few more student questions, and we'll let you go. But Victor has a question about your entire body of work. Victor, you can go ahead and unmute to ask, Brent.
Thanks. My question is, what do you prefer doing? Acting in camera, like in Seinfeld, or voice acting, like in SpongeBob or other series?
Well, I love, I'll add a third, and I'll go back to it. I enjoy Broadway more. That's stage acting. I enjoy that the most. You know, I do enjoy television. It's a lot of fun, and especially if it's a sitcom, I love to try and get. You know, I'm one of those hunters for a laugh. I'm always looking for where can I get a laugh. But then voice acting, I love. It's an awful lot of fun to do, but it's an easy job. I can go there in my pajamas and do the role. And I don't have to, you know, it's literally, I can be in and out of a studio having done an entire episode in about 20 minutes. So it doesn't take a lot of my time. It doesn't take a lot of my focus to do voice acting. But the being on stage is because there's nothing like it. At 8 o'clock, when the conductor drops his baton and the orchestra begins, there's no going back. There are no second takes. There's no retakes. Everything is just moving, and you got to be on your game.
That is wonderful, wonderful advice. And I can't imagine like the anxiety or, you know, how do you, I just want to know, how do you get over that stage fright, or did you never get stage fright?
No one had worse stage fright than I did back when I was in my early years in entertainment. And so I'd like to pass on to you the way that I got rid of it. And I got rid of it. I decided one night that I just couldn't continue this way in this way, because I was always so anxious or anxiety ridden over going on stage, even though I knew that this is what I was supposed to be doing. So I said to myself, I can't continue in this career. If this is what it's going to do to me, I'll have a heart attack at the age of 30 and I'll be, you know, I can't do this. So I made a decision, a conscious decision one night. It was opening night for a play that was very important to me that I was doing. It was a two-man play called Mass Appeal. And I said to myself, I'm going to throw the play. I'm going to throw this whole thing away tonight. And I'm going to go out on stage and I'm going to have fun. And that was the first time I ever said to myself that word, fun. Because stage was never fun for me. It was always anxiety ridden. And I went out on stage and I said, I'm having fun. I'm going to have fun. What's the next thing I can do that'll be fun? Well, that character grew immeasurably large that night because I went out there to have fun. And so my creative tools were all of a sudden excited, and I was able to use them much more than I was when I was all stiff and anxious. Now, I do one thing. I take that to this. I take that on stage every night now. But I add to that one prayer. I say one prayer before I go on stage. And I say, God, let me be surprised. And that's all I'm looking for. So when I say that, it's because I feel instantly relaxed. And I realize I'm not out there to act. I'm out there to find my surprise. Something is going to be different about that show that night that wasn't there the night before or the night before that. So if I say I've done 2,000 performances as Billy Flynn in the musical Chicago on Broadway, I would tell you that the role is 2,000 times richer than when I first started doing the role, because every night I've gone on and I've said that prayer to myself, God, let me be surprised. And something always, always happened during the show that I said, ah, there it is. I've never seen that before.
That is amazing advice. We'll go with two more questions and then we'll let you go. Is that all right?
Sure. I've got time, so.
All right, you bet. Celia, go ahead and unmute to ask. We got this question quite a bit from the students.
Okay, hi, so I'm a big fan from the show Seinfeld, and I would love to know, how was it like to work with Jerry Seinfeld?
Well, I didn't work as much with Jerry. Our storylines didn't really cross that much. But obviously, because, you know, the cast is small and we're all doing the same show, Jerry's set, the apartment set, was right next door to the J. Peterman office. So Jerry and I had, you know, a lot of dealings. He's a genius, and he's a comic genius. And if you remember, throughout his career, Jerry has never used a four-letter word, ever. He's the cleanest comic, and you'll always get that. And he had to find a way to continue that style of comedy in a show on NBC. And so I always regarded him with such respect, because he always kept things clean and above board. And one of the most gracious human beings. He was as kind and funny as can be. And he always walked around the set with a bowl of cereal in his hands, in a hand in his pocket. And he always kind of looked like a tourist, very unassuming, and but just a wonderful gentleman to work with. The other members of the cast, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who played Elaine, was maybe one of the great people I've ever worked with. I loved her dearly, and I loved our time together on the show for the five seasons that I was there. Same with Jason. I think he's one of the smartest actors in the business and tour de force. That whole show would have fallen flat had it not been for the strength of his character. George was going to be passionately mediocre. He was going to swing on the middle rung of the ladder of life and never once step forward. He was always going to be mediocre, but he did it with a passion that really was the core to that show. And then, of course, Michael Richards is probably the greatest physical comedian that we have in our lifetimes right now.
My favorite memory was you addressing him when you thought he was a drug dealer, peddling smack at the Jay Peterman office.
That's right. Get out of here, you gong beater.
Okay, Antonio, we'll let you ask the final student question. Antonio, go ahead and unmute to ask. He might be having some audio issues, so I will go ahead and ask on his behalf because he messaged it to me earlier. So he wants to know, do you have any tricks in your job, like hiding the scripts in the drawer to read it? Or how do you memorize a script? Like, what is your strategy?
Oh, that's interesting. How do you memorize? Well, you know, as you get older, and I'm getting older, it gets more and more difficult. As I mentioned before, I just finished a play, a 90-minute monologue. And I'll tell you, that was probably the most difficult thing I've done, not only for the subject matter, but I had to learn 90 minutes of material, and I couldn't, there are no mistakes. You have to learn every word. I look at things. First of all, I read it and I read it and I read it, so I understand the story, so I know where the line is going, because it makes sense that I would say that next. But I begin with verbs. I memorize the verbs first of a sentence, because then if I can go verb to verb to verb to verb to verb, then the story makes sense. The verb is really the action word in the sentence. So it's easier if you start with that and then go back and color it with the adjectives, the adverbs, and the nouns and the subject and everything. But start with the verbs, because normally that will be your key to where the character is going in the play. So if I had something sneaky, it would be learn your verbs.
Here you go, guys. Learn your verbs. Start studying that English language arts. So before we let you go, I always ask this of all of our guests. John, you are active in the entertainment industry. Many people don't know this, but you are very active with philanthropic work. So first of all, thank you for joining us today. What kind of advice would you give for these kids as they go off into the world and kind of figure out what paths they want to lead? They're about to go on to the next chapter of their lives. So what kind of advice would you have?
I'll give you the greatest advice that I've ever been given. And it was this: you have two choices in life. You can have an ordinary life, or you can have an extraordinary life. And the difference is that when you choose to have an extraordinary life, you are listening to your imagination, you are engaging in contemplation and appreciation. And those are the three elements of living an extraordinary life. Listen to your imagination. Engage your sense of contemplation, your sense of stillness, not living in the future, not living in the past, living in the present moment. That's what contemplation is. And then finally, appreciation, realizing that every human being has a value and everybody is inherently broken in this world. So if you can realize the value and the inherent brokenness of every one of us, then you will honestly learn what appreciation is.
Well, John, we appreciate you, and we can't thank you enough for your kindness and donating your time today and speaking to kids all over the world. Guys, we'll have the recording of this posted by end of week. So before I let you go, before I end the meeting, for all. I traditionally allow everyone to unmute. Can we all thank John O'Hurley for taking time to talk to us today about his career?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.